be a witness for my Lord? Will you be a witness for my Lord?
Prospective immigrants, please take note. Either you will go through this door or you will not go through. If you go through, there is always the risk of remembering your name. Things look at you doubly, and you must look back and let that happen. If you do not go through, it is possible to live worthily, to maintain your attitudes, to hold your position, to die bravely. But much will blind you. Much will evade you. At what cost? Who knows? The door itself makes no promises. It is only a door. Good morning, beloved friends. Sometimes it is hard, really hard, to look at a story or a situation in our lives head on, especially when power and privilege have been manipulated to abuse and demean, demoralize and dehumanize, exploit and disrespect the dignity of another. And of the many things that can and probably should be said about the gospel of Mark's account of the grotesque beheading of John the Baptist by Herod, at least this much is true. This is, without a doubt, a hard, awful, and offensive story from every perspective. And am I the only one here this morning who feels our own national and global reality, especially over these past few weeks, is feeling equally as hard and awful and, yes, offensive? Are King Herod's actions really all that far from the callous manipulations of power we are seeing today, where brutal autocrats are praised for the sake of appearing strong, and children are torn from their parents in the name of law and order? Both in scripture and in our modern day headlines, we seem to be confronted with realities that at times feel almost too much to bear. And so this morning I begin with Adrienne Rich's lovely poem, Prospective Immigrants, Please Take Note, as a way to perhaps ease us into this difficult conversation. It is a poem she wrote decades ago for those coming into this country from a foreign land and the choices that are before them. I seek Rich's forgiveness as I take her poem slightly out of that context and overlay it onto our gospel lesson this morning. And though it probably bears little mention, I will. I certainly acknowledge the blatant irony of using this poem today. This morning I want to use this poem to help us frame a choice I believe is before each of us today. A choice about another set of doors. Not the door or border an immigrant might be facing, but the doors or borders that we face as followers of Jesus, as those who profess our allegiance to a God of love and mercy. So I want you to sit back and get comfortable in your chair, and let me ask you to paint a picture in your mind, a picture to represent a choice before us. Both the picture and the choice is yours alone, and only you will know what is right. I invite you to close your eyes if you're comfortable for just a moment or two. I want you to move into a virtual hallway. In your hallway, there are two doors that you can see very clearly from where you stand. Take a minute and look at those doors. They look different from each other. Think about what they look like. What are they made out of? Maybe one is made of wood, and maybe one is made of steel. What color are they? Is one brown? Is one red? Is one green? And where are these doors in your virtual hallway? Are they close enough to touch? Are they far ahead of you? Maybe one is even behind you. And now walk up slowly to each of them, one at a time. And as you do, you will see that each of them has a plaque on it with a single word. On the first door that you approach is the word in big block letters, surrender. Now move to the second door, and as you approach that, you see again another plaque with one single word in big block letters, and it says, survival. One door says surrender, and one door says survival. Stand there for just one last moment and get a good and lasting image of those doors. And now I invite you to return to the room. Adrienne Rich's poem ends with these lines. The door itself makes no promises. It is only a door. And here is where our context this morning veers ever so slightly in a different direction. When we look at the doors in our hallway through the lens of our faith journey, I believe that our doors do, in fact, make some promises. So what are the promises of these two doors? And how will we know which and when to choose one or the other? I invited us to begin in our own virtual hallways this morning in order to remind us of our agency. Agency is simply the ability to choose and then act. And as simplistic as that may sound, I am astonished how often I forget or forfeit my own agency. Now, I am mindful of my context as I make that statement. I am, and most of us in this place, are blessed with what I would call first world privilege. Most, though perhaps not all of us, have the security of a place to live, food to eat, meaningful work, and people to love and be loved by. And for those who don't, and there are so many, too many who don't, what I am about to say may sound irrelevant and not very meaningful. So I acknowledge that challenge and move on regardless, hoping that by claiming our agency from a position of privilege can and will have the potential to help more than just ourselves. Agency, you see, is a gift and one that I think we must never take for granted. Claiming agency also comes with responsibility to act and react based on the values we profess and the promises we make, to live in our lives as faithful witnesses of the gospel. So back to our doors in the hallway. As we stand in front of the door labeled surrender, I wonder who and what we will see if and when we open it. For me, as I open that door, I am enveloped with a formidable wave of what I am going to start calling defiant hope. Behind that door, just waiting to be seen, are people and possibilities that refuse to take no for an answer when someone else's dignity or safety is at risk. People that represent defiant hope. Behind that door are more questions than the all too often strident and self-righteous answers filling much of today's public discourse. Questions that represent defiant hope. Behind that door is a world where justice and mercy are the power that melts frozen and calloused and fearful hearts, dissolving artificially constructed barriers of division. Examples that represent defiant hope. Behind that door of surrender is the strength and profound willingness to lay down our all too common need to always be right, to always speak first, to always have the answer, to always have a carefully crafted critique, and in the process forget that our way just might not only be the only way. Strength that represents defiant hope. And here is the really good news, my friends. As we stand in the hallway and claim our agency and choose and then act to turn or push open that door labeled surrender, we will be immediately welcomed into the company of ordinary saints, those still here and those who are no longer with us, all of us who help lead the way for each other. Just behind the door labeled surrender are the people and stories we can draw from to find strength for our journey today. Some of the stories are small and ordinary, and others are epic. Some are close and familiar. Some are ancient and emanate from places we have never been. A reservoir of defiant hope. So go on. Reach for that door. Open it now and see what and who is inside today in this expansive place God invites us to call home, a place of total surrender and defiant hope. When I open that door today, here is one of the things that I see. It's a cleanup crew, the cleanup that is taking place in Austin, Texas, following the recent 8-day gathering of our denomination's triennial meeting, General Convention. Held every 3 years, General Convention is the bicameral governing body of our church, comprised of a house of bishops with more than 200 active and retired bishops, and the House of Deputies with clergy and lay deputies elected from our 109 dioceses and 3 regional areas in the Episcopal Church from 16 different autonomous countries with more than 800 members. In addition to those who do the legislative work for our denomination, upwards of 2,000 additional people attend to witness and work and celebrate the ministry and mission we share as Episcopalians. Through daily prayer and worship and meeting after meeting after meeting, this massive wave of witness of the Episcopal branch of the Jesus Movement faced this year into a plethora of really important issues and opportunities. I want to mention one in particular today, one in particular that is important to me and I think is important to this church and I think is important in light of today's gospel. As a profound example of the power of claiming our agency and walking through that door labeled surrender. This year, the 79th meeting of General Convention faced into the Episcopal Church's role and response to the Me Too movement with resolutions, reflections, and hope for reconciliation. There were close to 30 related resolutions filed having something to do with sexual harassment and exploitation. I am proud of our church for doing this, not because we always get it right or that we haven't made really, really big mistakes and committed egregious errors. We have done all of that. I know it all too well. But walking through this door this past week is about accountability and daring to seek God's grace and forgiveness. One of the most powerful moments of convention just may have been the evening of July 4th, when hundreds of our brothers and sisters gathered to attend a 2-hour worship service entitled A Liturgy of Listening. Prior to convention, a planning committee had garnered many firsthand reflections on experiences of sexual harassment, abuse, and exploitation, and that night, 10 of those narratives were shared publicly. And while that alone would have been significant and powerful, what made it even more profound for me and maybe so many others was that the reflections were written and then read in first person not by the anonymous survivor, but by individual bishops. At first, watching from home, far away, and without a bulletin that may have offered some kind of an explanation, it was jarring and confusing at first. But then I realized, deeply realized, what was happening. Those in the most preeminent positions of power, those who we logically assume are the authoritative figures who commit themselves to our well-being, they were the ones risking what might have been their own discomfort to walk through the door labeled surrender for the greater good. It was a powerful step, a step forward, and one that I see as a survivor myself and appreciate in ways that are hard to articulate but are felt deeply. We need that kind of defiant hope. So here is the challenge for all of us this morning as we turn back to this difficult gospel story. When we hear the story of Herod's gruesome and horrific violence and corruption, I want us first to locate our own power. We are, of course, a world apart from Herod, aren't we? We could never resemble what we see and hear and think of him, right? We would never stand by and be complicit or remain silent or unwilling to use our power and privilege and agency to stand up for someone else, right? Wrong. We do. We don't. We will. We won't. It's confusing, and it's hard, hard gospel work. Too often, many of us are guilty of being complicit or complacent, even with the best of intentions. We have more reasons than we can count to justify why we stay silent and may be scared to go through the door marked surrender. Instead, and I've done it myself, I take a few steps back and scurry on into the door marked survival. Behind that door is a place that asks nothing of us in the end. The place where status quo reigns and those who don't rock the boat and upset the power dynamics and institutions are rewarded for staying silent. To be clear, the story of John the Baptist's beheading is about power at its worst, and for that reason may be glossed over and not talked about in public because it's simply too gruesome. But my friends, when we do that, we miss the chance to do some much-needed soul-searching of our own. Our agency, our power, is a mighty force and a gift from God. And who are we to deny the power of that gift and that responsibility? Herod's kind of power is the power behind the door labeled survival. It's not only interested in maintaining the status quo, it is destructive, damaging, demoralizing, debilitating, and demeaning. It is a use of power that has no regard, none whatsoever, for the other. It is the power that wants us to forget we have a responsibility to treat each person with dignity and respect. So here we are in the hallway of our lives. Every day we are called into a consciousness demanding we become increasingly aware of and accountable to the gifts that we have been given, the gifts of free will and the gift of agency. The choice is ours in that hallway. And remember, each door does come with a cost. Neither is free from consequences. On the days when that hallway is dark and we are tired or angry or bitter about how the world has not accommodated our needs or done things our way, it may indeed feel easier to push through the door labeled survival. There may also be moments we find ourselves already inside that door, not knowing even how we got there, and unclear about how to get out. On those days, there may seem to be only one choice, and it is hard to remember and claim our agency. And when that happens, as sometimes it will, I pray we remember to slow down and breathe and call your lifeline of a friend, or recall a memory or a story representing defiant hope, the defiant hope that is ours for the asking, that promises to lead us always back out into that virtual hallway so that we can make another choice. Sometimes waiting to see that other door requires great humility and courage. Courage to lay down our unearned yet very real privilege and power. You see, we are planters of kingdom seeds, all of us. Entrusted to plant seeds that with the divine's help can grow into a kind of generous, radical love. The kind of love Martin Luther King Jr. was talking about when he said, "Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that." So may we resist the temptation to cling to our blinders that keep us safe behind the door marked survival, and instead risk whatever it takes to follow the path of defiant hope, leading us always to the door marked surrender. That is the path that Jesus has carved out for us and is calling us to follow. Remember, just moments before this gruesome story in Mark's gospel, Jesus sent out his disciples, not alone, but two by two, to do kingdom work, and then he told them, "Come home. Come home and tell me your stories so that we can hear each other's stories." My friends, it's my prayer that we do the exact same thing. We go out two by two, scatter some wild, loving, radical kingdom seeds, and then scurry on back home, where we will be waiting right here to join with you and to listen and together become defiant hope. May it be so.